We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Hello and welcome to a very special bird carcass edition of the quote-unquote expert, quote-unquote roundtable. My name is Adam Levitan. I'm the father of a very special lady, the most beautiful beast in the world, Jerry. And as always, on Friday nights, I am joined by the sharpest hippie in DFS. He rode here on his canoe. It is JM to win. JM, what's going on?
I'd like to point out to viewers what a professional Adam is. It's his least favorite holiday. He sounded like, Adam, you sounded like a 40% version of yourself right before we came on air. And then camera comes on and Adam's like 100% energy. So just bringing the heat. I love it. So shout out to Adam for sustaining life through the worst holiday in history, apparently.
Yeah, I'm feeling a little burnt out a little bit. I haven't regged a lot for this week, mostly because I haven't been able to pay attention to main slate that much. I was heavily invested in the Thanksgiving slate and was kind of stressed about that. But I'm probably going to end up playing a decent amount. So I am interested to hear a lot about what you have to say on this slate. I didn't see a ton of very cheap options this week. I think that there are some undervalued players in the mid-range. Kind of my first instinct on this slate was that the optimal lineup construction or the most common lineup construction would be a balanced approach. I don't know if you have seen anything different.
I don't really know. I try not to pay too much attention to the noise. I know early in the week I did my Monday night pod, and the first thing that stood out to all of us was, you know, try to pay down at wide receiver and pay up at running back just because there's no value at running back at first glance. We'll get into that in a bit. There's a couple guys I like quite a bit at the lower end for upside, and they're kind of questionable in cash games, but we'll work through that. But yeah, I think there's a lot of different ways you can go on this slate. I think on a slate where the clearest path is one thing, but it's not necessarily the clear best path. It gives you a lot of freedom to do different things in tournaments and whatnot. So, yeah, we can get through this. I'm excited too. I mean, Thanksgiving's a weird week, like you said, a lot of work for the Thanksgiving slate, and then you know, time with other things. So this is kind of like buckle down time tonight, tomorrow, and you know, I always get a clear read on things after we do our show. So I'm looking forward to that. I think I have slight connectivity issues here in New England, right on the beach. So hopefully you guys can hear me all right, and we'll see what we learn tonight.
Yeah, you sound good. Real quick before we get into it, you didn't actually eat turkey, right? Do you have like some substitute turkey that you ate?
I did eat turkey.
Oh, no.
So, I you know, what was worse was sugar, because I don't usually eat a lot of sugar. So I usually eat fish is the only meat I eat, but lean meat doesn't bother my stomach. So I dipped into the turkey a little bit, had maybe a quarter of a serving just for tradition's sake. But I mean, I feel like trash right now.
If you're going to like break your no meat rule, the worst thing to do is break it on some like thick, dry, like disgusting turkey. But anyways,
No, you know what? I actually broke it in Nashville too. Eating leftover chicken off of Derek Carty's plate.
Oh.
Which is, I'd realized I hadn't really eaten anything all day. And who do you think broached the subject of Carty? Are you going to finish all that? Can we eat it?
Silva.
You got a guess from that voice?
Yeah, Silva.
Your boy Evan Silva. So we picked up some chicken as well. So I've had some good bad lean meat the last few days.
All right. Let's get into this slate. We'll start the quarterback position. As always, we're referring to DraftKings scoring and DraftKings roster construction. I think if you don't realize the massive differences between DraftKings and FanDuel, you're doing yourself a disservice. So we are referring to DraftKings scoring, DraftKings pricing here at the quarterback position. Below 6K, I did not see a ton to chew on, but my favorite play, I think, at the quarterback position, or one of my favorite plays at the quarterback position, is below 6K. I have no idea if he's chalk or not. I have no idea if other people are talking about him or not, but I believe that Jacoby Brissett is set up really well in a home game against the Titans, who have turned into a funnel defense once again, just like they were last year. Expect a pass-heavy game plan. Colts are on a long week playing at home on their turf, where T.Y. Hilton has performed really well. And we've seen Jacoby Brissett have these huge games when he's had good matchups. Tore through the Browns, tore through the 49ers, tore through the Texans. So that's my favorite quarterback play under 6K. I have no idea if other people are on it. Did you look at Brissett, and what do you think?
That's what you bring to the table, right? You're supposed to have all the pulse on the industry, what's going on.
I know. I'm a mess.
He's throwing us off. So, I mean, I'll dip deeper than that to a couple three puke-worthy plays, but I think they're all viable. With how little value there is, I think they're potentially viable in cash. The only thing that throws a wrench in it is that I think Russ Wilson can get like 30 points, and I don't want to pay. I think there's some cheap guys who can get us 14 to 18 points, which if they get that and the expensive guys get 22, I'm happy. I'm thrilled. If they get that and Russ gets 30, then we're in tough shape. But I do think CJ Beathard against a Seattle team that, you know, the 49ers are still first in pace of play, first in passing play percentage. Adam's shaking his head. But against a team missing their two best players in the secondary, Beathard has been consistently putting up 14-plus points. Paxton Lynch, again, shake your head some more at that. But Oakland – and you got Bill Musgrave. You bring in a new coordinator, the only thing they're going to do is simplify everything. So what they want to do is give him – basically, they're going to try to get him two reads on the same side of the field every play to give him easy decisions. Scheme guys wide open, short, quick passes. I think that he can pile up points. Again, these are all, like, risky plays, but I think that they're all viable. Definitely in tournaments, possibly even in cash, depending on how much risk you want to take on salary savers. And then Trubisky – against the Eagles, who have faced by far the most pass attempts and by far the fewest rush attempts in the NFL. Trubisky's going to throw it 35 times. He's going to pick up 40 yards on the ground. I believe the Eagles have given up the sixth most rushing yards to quarterbacks. So I think they're all viable. Brissett, I like Brissett. I have more respect for the Tennessee pass defense than just about anyone else does. And we'll get to that when we get to T.Y. Hilton. I do think that Brissett is a high upside play. I think he's a great tournament play. I think his floor is lower than most people will assume. So I'll kind of stop there and just say I do think that his upside is high. I think his chances of hitting his upside are a little bit lower than most will assume. So ownership will probably climb higher than where I want to go on him, but I like the play in general.
My problem with Beathard and Trubisky is you're talking about like not only really shaky low floor quarterbacks, but also like atrocious weapons. You know what I mean? And at least Paxton Lynch has Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas, and Paxton Lynch is somewhat athletic. They're encouraging him to run. I know Vance Joseph came out this week and said, hey, listen, we want Paxton Lynch to run. And Paxton Lynch is 4,400. I don't even know what Beathard and Trubisky are. I assume that they're more. But 4,400.
4,600, yeah.
I mean, 4,400 is crazy, crazy cheap for a starting quarterback in, I think we would say, the best matchup or one of the best possible matchups. And Beathard and Trubisky are in, I think, difficult matchups. I mean, you can say what you want about volume, but efficiency standpoint, Trubisky and Beathard, I think, are going to be poor. I would probably feel a little bit better about Beathard than Trubisky, but I think Paxton Lynch, out of those three kind of puke options that you mentioned, is pretty clearly my favorite. One other guy under 6K that we didn't bring up is Tyrod Taylor, back in the saddle, going to Kansas City. This Kansas City pass rush is hashtag bad now. They're just getting no pressure on the quarterback whatsoever. And also their corner situation opposite Marcus Peters is just a total disaster. We know Tyrod Taylor has like a 4.5 point rushing expectation every week. So I think Tyrod at 5,800 is okay. The problem is once you start creeping into that high 5K range, then you have guys like, you know, Matt Ryan and Marcus Mariota and Andy Dalton or whatever else you want in the 6K range. So Tyrod would probably be more of a strict GPP play for me. Anything on Tyrod, and do you have any favorites in the 6K range?
Yeah, you kind of like spelled out my thoughts exactly. Was I said in my article this week, well, first off with Tyrod, my one main concern outside of it being on the road at Arrowhead, obviously we know he plays a lot better at home, but it's just that they really don't throw the ball downfield. The Bills are really a short passing team. The Chiefs have allowed the lowest completion rate in the NFL. The issue isn't that they like, it's just easy to complete passes. The issue is all the big plays. So those are going to be tougher to come by. And what I said was like, yeah, I like Tyrod, but then when you look at him at 58, you're like, okay, but I could get up to Dalton at 6K or Mariota at 6,300. And then once you get to Mariota at 6,300, you're like Russell Wilson 7K. So I like Dalton a lot. Obviously, I think by now people know I'm higher on the Browns defense than most people are. They've allowed the eighth fewest yards in the NFL. The issue with the points is just all the turnovers. So the turnovers are going to be there. Bengals are going to force turnovers. Dalton will have short fields to work with, but you're probably looking at 240 yards and you hope you get those four touchdowns again. Mariota, I think it's just a phenomenal spot. You know, it's just, he's not their whole offense like Russell Wilson is for Seattle. And I've concerned on him too, but I like Mariota is my favorite in this range. I like him more than Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan is constantly, I think it's four out of his last five games, under 30 pass attempts. Steve Sarkisian is just a complete dunce. And while I love the matchup, I can't trust it as much as I can trust some of these other guys. So I'll go Mariota in that range as my favorite. I'm assuming that's where you're landing as well.
Yeah, I mean, I always love Marcus Mariota. I think I'm higher on Matt Ryan in this spot than you probably. I mean, even if you have a dunce coach, even if you've underperformed a lot of the year, like home in the dome against Tampa, like it's not going to get much better than that. So at 6,400, I'm certainly intrigued by Matt Ryan. But yeah, Andy Dalton, although he's often struggled in the division, like not against the Browns, he's torn apart the Browns. So I don't know, maybe Jason McCourty makes a big enough difference there where you want to be like, eh, I'll just find the 300 or 400 to get to Merritt or Ryan. Before we get to Russ, any thoughts on Cam and Breeze, both going on the road? Both, I think, would say probably have middling matchups. There are injuries in the Rams secondary. I have Cam and Breeze more as GPP plays than cash game options. Do you have any thoughts on them?
Yeah, Breeze is just he's never a guy that you'll say is a bad play. He's not the, you know, on paper, he's below a lot of these other guys. You can always justify a shot on him in tourneys. Cam Newton is basically Tyreek Hill or Melvin Gordon right now. There's nothing we can even look at in the matchups to say this is a spot where Cam will do well, this is a spot where he will do poorly. It's not dependent on the matchup so much as which version of Cam Newton shows up. So I think you can always take a shot on him in tournaments for 30-plus points. Obviously, his floor is like 12 points. So Cam is not a guy I'm focused on. He's not a guy I like because I like a higher expectation. I like more certainty than that. But I think both guys are very fine in tournaments for sure.
Yeah, I think the difference with Cam lately is like he's running 9 to 10 times a game consistently now, back to like where he was in 2015. And anytime you get 9 to 10 rushes from Cam Newton, it's like, man, that provides you a pretty high floor. But yeah, it's just an okay matchup. All right, the two guys in the 7K range everybody is going to want to roster, may not be able to afford, is Russ Wilson, with the state of their defense, as you mentioned, with the state of their run game, which is a stone disaster. It is all on Russ. Everything is on Russ. He's 7K. Tom Brady, we know it is likely to be a blowout against the Miami Dolphins. Tom Brady is 7,700. I think Tom Brady's ownership will stick around maybe like the 10 to 12% range, just because he's so expensive. I doubt we'd be paying for Tom Brady in cash, but do you see viability to paying for Tom Brady in tournaments even at 7,700?
I like Brady slightly less than I like Russ. I love both guys. I think that they're 1 and 2, and in whatever order you want to put them for raw point expectations. My concern with Russ, so here's the thing. Russ is their whole offense, right? You know that. I know that. 90% of the DFS population knows that. Daryl Bevel has no idea. And I've talked for weeks about how reactive this Seattle team is. So they have scored in their, I believe it's their last four games, they've scored between 14 and 41 points. All of those games have been between 3 and 6 point games. Like, they play every game close and they play to their opponent. These aren't 41 to 38 games because the Seahawks decided to open things up. These aren't 14 to 17 games because the Seahawks decided, like, the Seahawks just try to run the ball. They're complete idiots. So I have genuine, like, I think if you roster Russ, do not even look at scoring until almost halftime or halftime, like after Russ gets that, you know, 2 minute or 4 minute drill, because they're going to try to run the ball the first quarter and Russ is going to have four passes and one carry, something dumb like that. So like, it pisses me off. I'm concerned about San Francisco's weapons and the viability, as you pointed out, of them actually putting up points. So I'm genuinely concerned about Russ, but you know, he's shown a floor of 18 points lately and a ceiling of like 39 or whatever. I mean, the only way for them to move the ball is with Russell Wilson throwing, running the ball. So I'm a little bit concerned. Obviously he's the best on paper play, but that's why I'm just as fine going with Tommy as I am with Russ in this spot.
And one thing about the 49ers is they continue to play very fast, despite having an atrocious secondary. I believe they're up to third in neutral situation pace. Like, they're going to play fast, which is crazy considering the talent level that they have on defense and in their secondary. So I think that's why San Francisco often sets up well. Road favorites in the division is usually not a spot I like to attack with the road team. So that would be another cause for pause on Russ. But man, I mean, I always love Russ. Appears he's back not having sex again, which I think is good. Dak is having like full-on orgies now based on the way that he's been playing lately. So yeah, it's interesting. You know, I think on this slate, I'm probably gonna have to find a way to pay down. I'm not sure I'm gonna be able to find my way to Russ in cash, but we will certainly see. Anything else at the quarterback position?
Obviously it's whatever. It's the NFL. Anything can happen. But I think we've covered the actual best plays, the sharpest plays, and anything else from there is just branching out and hoping something works out.
All right, below 5K at the running back position is extremely thin. I will bring up one guy who I think continues to be overrated, but Joe Mixon has been bad in the NFL. His offensive line is bad. He has underperformed even relative to his offensive line. I think. But when you get a ton of short fields against Cleveland, you have chances to fall into the end zone, like the Latavius Murray syndrome. I don't expect Joe Mixon to be very efficient against a good Browns run defense, but I do expect game flow to be in his favor, and I expect him to get 15 to 20 touches at 4,400. And hopefully, I would assume that a lot of those will be short fields based on the absolute ineptitude of DeShone Kizer, which continues to just boggle the mind. So when I first looked at Joe Mixon, I was like, he sucks. Their offensive line sucks, and the Browns have run good defense. Forget it. But then I started to look more at the slate, and I was like, well, we have to consider a guy 4,400 for 20 touches with possibly a lot of red zone work. So what do you think about Mixon and below the 5K range at running back?
Mixon's in the same bucket as Corey Coleman in that you don't want to play them in this matchup, but the workload and the lack of strong value plays, it's justifiable. I wouldn't go near him in cash games. I think it's justifiable in tournaments. I'll give you one that's, I think, a better cash game play. That's Devontae Booker. So Booker outsnapped CJ Anderson last week. Musgrave said that Booker deserves more work. Roto World didn't blurb that quote from Musgrave, and because of that, no one really saw it. I've not seen a single person bring up Booker. I've not seen any hype around Booker, but this is a dude who should get, I mean, Jamaal Charles was kind of phased out last week. He should get 15 plus touches and could get more than that in an excellent matchup against Oakland. Good pass catching back. So I think Booker is totally viable. And then in tournaments, JD McKissick got 50 snaps last week. And I know that Mike Davis went down, Thomas Rawls was inactive, but you know, Eddie Lacy got what, 3 carries for 2 yards, and they're bringing back Rawls this week, but Mike Davis is going to be out. I mean, what are they going to do? Obviously I would prefer this game to be against a team like Atlanta that could turn in a 34-31 game. But again, you talked about the volume of plays. I think that McKissick is totally viable in tourneys. He's averaging, I think, like 4.4 yards per carry compared to 2.5 and 2.6 for Lacy and Rawls. So you'd think at some point, maybe after Darrell Bevell is dead and gone, someone will realize that this was a guy they should have been giving the ball to more. But I like it. And then, you know, last week you texted me on Sunday about what I called the cheat code, which was Crowell and Duke Johnson together, playing them like a single high-priced running back. And I would argue that the roster spot is just more valuable than doing that. But last week I didn't feel tremendously confident in any of the high-priced running backs, and this week there's not a lot of value. So this is one more that last week, you know, before they have Coleman and Josh Gordon to throw to, that I'm willing to go there together, treat them as one high-priced running back, 4+ points in 6 of the last 8 games. It's the only way for the Browns to move the ball. I know they're idiots. They don't know what they're doing. Hugh Jackson is like, I mean, he's a guy that we used to like when he was with the Bengals. We used to call him a talent optimizer. He was a guy that we felt strongly about. I think he's just in over his head as a head coach. But I do think that Crowell and Duke Johnson is, once again, a viable way to expose yourself, you know, probably to 24 to 31 points and treat it as one high-priced running back and just say, look, there's my value, and I'm hoping for 25 to 30 and move forward from there.
Yeah, I think this Bengals defense is has a chance to play really well against the Browns, so I'm not sure I would make that play this week. When you said cheat code last week, I thought you were referring to playing Bruce Ellington and Crowder together. I thought that was the cheat code. I got confused on what the cheat code was last week.
Yeah, I mean, and for me, so here's the thing, though. Like, the Bengals they've allowed the 3rd most running back receptions. Mm-hmm. They've allowed the 10th most rushing yards. Teams mm-hmm. really don't pass on the Bengals. And when they do, they throw to the running back. So I just think that it's the track record. It's, you know, coming into last week, it was 6 out of 7 games that they'd scored 24 plus, but now it's 6 out of 8 games. But even that, like, you're locking in a bad game from those two combined is like 18 points. And there's a lot of high priced running backs who could end up with 12 or 14. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm fine spending that salary there. To be clear, I break it down in the NFL Edge this week for anybody who wants deeper thoughts on that, but I don't think it's viable in the Millie Maker where you got to finish first place out of 200,000 entries. But I finished top 0.5% of tournaments last week with those two guys combining for what, like 19 points. So I think anything under 10,000 entries it's a totally viable. I got 30x my investment, you know, with those two together. I think it's a totally viable play for the salary that it opens up.
One other guy under 5K who was the mega chalk last week and is in kind of a similar situation, but nobody is on him, I'm sure, is Rex Burkhead at 4,300. He was like 40% owned last week. I don't think his usage last week was that bad. He got six targets. He did fumble, which I think caught him some time on the pine, but I don't really see a role change for Rex Burkhead. Just as kind of like a bounce back play. I mean, we saw that with so many guys last week who were the chalk in week 10. Then they failed and then nobody played him in week 11, such as Jordan Howard, such as Marvin Jones. Do you see any bounce back appeal for Rex Burkhead?
Yeah, I hadn't thought much about it just because I don't like trying to figure out the Patriots backfield. And I feel like we can lock in Deion Lewis as the guy to get 12 to 15 carries. But yeah, I like that call in tournaments. I mean, for anybody who liked Burkhead last week, there's literally no reason to like him less this week. I didn't like Burkhead last week, so I won't be there. But for anybody, if you liked Burkhead last week, everything still sets up the same. Like Adam said, I think that's a really sharp call in tournaments.
All right, let's talk about who I expect, who everybody expects to be the most owned player on the slate, with Devontae Freeman being ruled out due to his concussion. Tevin Coleman will certainly be the feature back. Teron Ward, hashtag team preseason, will mix in. DraftKings has normally done like a very aggressive job of pricing up backups in these kind of situations. They kind of half-assed it a little bit on Tevin because he's not cheap, but he's not expensive. But I still think he's at a price at 6,500 where he'll just be massively owned. Is Tevin Coleman in a home game against the Bucks good chalk or bad chalk at, say, 40%, 45%?
I really don't know. You know, and this is like, I hate to say that, like, that's not what we're here to say, but I am so confused by this Atlanta offense. So Tevin Coleman has five catches in his last six games. And you say, okay, but Devontae Freeman gets the pass game work now. Combined, they are averaging three catches per game in their last five games. That concerns me. Like, I don't want to pay $6,500 for two to three catches. That's not what I'm here for. If I'm paying up, I want, and we talked about this briefly right before the show, but just up until week 7 or 8 last year, people laughed at anyone who paid up for high priced running backs consistently. Like, it was the most fish move because you could get those same touches for cheaper. And then Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson changed the game with 8 or 9 catches each week that you're like, man, I can get all these catches and the carries. There's nobody doing that. So Tevin Coleman is a fine play. Will it surprise me if he gets 20 points? Absolutely not. Like, I would totally be like, yeah, that's expected. Would it surprise me if he gets 10 points? Absolutely not. So that's my concern. Like, I might end up with Tevin Coleman. I might not. I just think that we need to think deeper. Like, each individual needs to think deeper into it. Like, okay, let's not just auto think through this and be like, oh, this guy's going to get all the work, we have to play him, but think this guy's going to get probably three catches. That's what the track record shows, and 20 carries. Do I want three catches and 20 carries against Tampa Bay? So I don't know. What are your thoughts if you get three catches and 20 carries there?
Yes, three catches and 20 carries at 6,500 for a player I think is pretty talented in Tevin Coleman. Yes, I think part of the issue why we haven't seen pass game usage out of the running backs is just like play volume. Like, the Falcons just aren't running enough plays. I think they're like 28th or 29th in plays per game. Like, they just haven't been sustaining drives against this Tampa defense, which is one of the league's worst in terms of pass rush, one of the league's worst in terms of defending wide receivers. I think they will sustain more drives. So yeah, you know, anytime like a running back or really anyone is going to get into the 50% range in tournaments, you can make a good case for a fade, especially when they're up over 6K. But I don't know. I'm probably not going to try to overthink it too much. I do not understand what you're saying. I mean, I don't know. It's a tough call. The other thing about the fading Coleman is, like, running back is not great this week. So
right.
From a position scarcity standpoint, I think people are just going to end up defaulting to Coleman. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, back-to-back games, 20 carries and – one catch, and one was against Seattle, sure, fine, but the other was against Dallas, you know, and he got 15.8 points. I guess I'm happy with 15.8 points, but like, if he's going to be 40% owned in tournaments, I'm also fine trying to find somebody who I think can get 30. And to be clear, I think Coleman can get 30. I don't think it's locked in. I think he could also get 12 or 13. So I'm a little more concerned than most will be. I might end up on him. I don't really know at this point.
I think maybe one of the only strong plays in the 5K range is Carlos Hyde, who continues to see massive pass game usage. He's 5,500. I believe his price might be depressed due to DraftKings adjusting for Seattle, which I'm not certain we should be adjusting for anymore given the state of their defense. So Carlos Hyde is like kind of popping in kind of some of the modeling stuff. How do you feel about him?
Yeah, I mean, I think his floor is the same as Coleman's, and I think his ceiling's about the same. Like, I think he's a very similar play as far as you throw in all these catches he's getting. I think he's a really strong, play to bring back if you're using Russell Wilson. Because if you're using Russ, you're saying Seattle's going to score points. And if Seattle puts up points, the 49ers throw the ball a ton to Carlos Hyde when they're behind. So, I would love to get those 8, 9, 11 targets for Carlos Hyde while everybody else is paying 1K more for 3 or 4 targets for Tevin Coleman. I love Carlos Hyde this week.
All right. Up in the top range, there is Todd Gurley in a home game against a depleted Saints defense. There is LeSean McCoy going on the road to Arrowhead. There is Mark Ingram going on the road to the Rams. There is Kareem Hunt in somewhat of a bounce back spot at home against the Bills team, which has been absolutely shredded by the run since trading Marcell Dareus. And there is Alvin Kamara, who continues to be the hottest back in the entire league. Is anybody popping out to you in that high priced range?
For me, it's the game in LA, the Gurley, Ingram, and Kamara. I love all three of them. If salary weren't an issue, I would roster all three guys. I think I rank them for raw points, probably Gurley, then Ingram, then Kamara. The Kamara being at the bottom is just because, touches are likely to be lower as they've been most weeks, but I'm fine rearranging that in any order. LeSean McCoy, the Chiefs have allowed the fewest rushing yards of 20 plus yards. So they've been like, they're giving up constant chunk gains, but not these huge runs. I like McCoy. That's just a slight drawback. Kareem Hunt, the Bills have been by far the worst run defense in the NFL the last 3 weeks, allowing 5.5 yards a carry, 9 rushing touchdowns allowed in 3 games. So like Kareem Hunt a lot. Then the only other guy up there is Fournette, who's obviously a step below all those guys when you factor in matchup. But I think from a game theory play in tournaments, he's fine.
Yeah, I think Kareem Hunt's usage has been fine. Like, the overall kind of poor play of not only Alex Smith lately, but also like the Kansas City defense has been so underwhelming lately. They just like keep setting up Kareem Hunt with like these really long fields. He has no red zone opportunities. They're just not stringing together drives. They're just not playing well. And like, Kareem Hunt's been playing awesome. His usage has been okay, like fine. They're just like not putting him in the positions to score well. If you think that Kansas City can play really well and the defense steps up against the Bills, Kareem Hunt, I think, will have a big game. So, I like Gurley a lot too. He is the most expensive one in this group. You think Gurley over Ingram, even at 500 more?
For raw points, I think I'm likelier to end up with Ingram because expectations are close enough between the two that I'm fine rolling with Ingram if I want to use that 500 elsewhere. With Ingram, I don't know. I think it's kind of a toss-up, like 45, 55, even with the arranging them in raw points in that order. So,
yeah.
But Gurley, just so many red zone touches. Obviously, Ingram, same thing. But Gurley is just dominating workload. He's first in the NFL and carries inside the 5, second in carries inside the 10, second in carries inside the 20, locked in pass game volume. Robert Woods is out. I think there's a lot to like there.
Anything off the board? We already went off the board a little bit. Anything else off the board at running back?
No, I think if I'm going down cheap, I'm going Devontae Booker in tournaments, considering J.D. McKissic, considering pairing the Browns running backs together. But we've hit on the things that are standing out to me at running back.
All right, let's move to wide receiver. I think we should start with the biggest injury of the week, which is Robert Woods. I think... So, like, there's two questions. A, do you think Cooper Kupp will move out of the slot and play in more two wide receiver sets? And B, do you think that he will see an increased target share? If so, he's an awesome play, even though Kenny Vaccaro will be back, the slot defender for the Saints. And B, or C, I guess, do you think Sammy Watkins will move to the right side at all? Because I think, like, people smarter than me have shown that Jared Goff, like, one of the reasons that Robert Woods' target share is so high compared to Sammy Watkins is because Goff literally can't go left, like Funkhauser's nephew in Curbs. So, like, Sammy Watkins hasn't had more than five targets since, like, week two. Everybody assumes that's going to change with Robert Woods out. I guess my question is, will they move Sammy Watkins around the formation and play some of Robert Woods' role? Either way, no Ken Crawley and no Marshawn Lattimore for the Saints. I mean, this is setting up as kind of a perfect storm with the way the injuries have broke on both sides for both Kupp and Sammy Watkins. So do you have takes on this Rams situation? We expect them to be high owned.
Yeah, the Lattimore and Crawley news came out today, so I'm still kind of processing all of that. The with Woods out, so first off, expectations for targets, I don't think it changes a ton. Goff has been up over 37 pass attempts in a couple straight games. That's when Woods' volume has really risen. Against a New Orleans team that's far better attacked on the ground, I expect them to keep Goff under 30 pass attempts as they had for most of the season. They're 29th in passing play percentage. So, you know, if he drops from 37 passes to 27, there goes Woods' 10 targets right there. So I don't think that the distribution among the rest of the guys changes that much. I think Kupp stays in the slot. I think, you know, we see Farrell Cooper or Mike Thomas or whoever they're going to put on the other side. And then Sammy Watkins, I really don't know. I think we're guessing. I think that we've seen that McVay is using Watkins as a deep threat. He's using him as his DeSean Jackson. His ADOT is in the top six or seven in the NFL. That's how they're wanting to use him. So, I mean, I genuinely think we're completely guessing. If he's going to be chalk, Watkins is a pretty easy guy for me to fade. I think that ownership percentage projections is something to pay attention to leading up to the week because we are 100% guessing. And anytime when you're 100% guessing, that makes that guy a high variance play. Like if Watkins stays in the same role, nobody would want him. And sure, he could still go off for a splash play, but not at high ownership. You don't want him. So I think that there's a chance that they get him more involved. I'm going to keep my ear to the ground and maybe we get a little more clarity by tomorrow. But with the news we have right now where we're just guessing and saying, yeah, I think Watkins, whatever, I'm fine staying away from him because, you know, he could very well end up in the same role, same target share. I don't expect Goff to throw more than 30, 31, 32 times. So I don't think his target expectation changes a whole lot this week.
One other injury at the wide receiver position, Rishard Matthews was limited on Thursday, sat out on Friday. They are calling him a game time decision. He says he thinks he'll be able to play. I do not know if he'll be able to play or not. So let's talk about Corey Davis from two different perspectives. Corey Davis, if Rishard Matthews is in, Corey Davis, if Rishard Matthews is out, Corey Davis is up to 4,900, which is a little more than I'd like to pay for a guy who has shown a bit of a struggle to separate, but this is a pretty good matchup, and he is an extremely talented player. So where do you come down on Corey Davis?
Yeah, Corey Davis was one of my favorite plays even before there was any Rishard Matthews news. He's been kind of a cash game staple for me. He's been my Jamison Crowder of this week or my Sterling Shepard of this week. He's just a guy that I'm gravitating toward on almost every roster I build. Obviously that could change by Sunday, but right now that's where I'm at. That's where I've been since Monday. Indianapolis allows, as we all know, the most plays of 20 plus yards. This is a Tennessee team that struggles to get deep passing going. You know, they're like 23rd in big plays, but Mariota threw 30% of his passes at least 15 yards downfield against this team when they played earlier in the season. So I think that they're going to get some targets going downfield. A lot of people have asked me about whether I'm concerned about Rashawn Melvin, who has played really well this year at corner. But, you know, I think, Adam, you and I have talked about this, and Evan and I were talking about this in Nashville. Just we freak out so much about good corners. We were talking about the Delvin Bro thing a couple years ago. Like, what a corner can be good. If a team doesn't have a pass rush, it really doesn't matter. So there, it would take like a really good corner who had just been shutting down guys for me to be concerned about 8 to 10 targets for 4,900. And I think that whether Rishard Matthews plays or not, we're looking at least 8 targets for Corey Davis. So I think he's an excellent play this week. He's one of my favorites. And then right below him, I like Kenny Stills quite a bit as well with Matt Moore starting. Matt Moore has shown a tendency to target Stills over Devontae Parker. So I think that that's a good place as well and a likely blowout, a lot of passing volume from the Dolphins.
One play, if you're following the flow chart of attacking the Cardinals opposite of Patrick Peterson, I expected this week to be D.D. Westbrook. Keelan Cole will be in the slot. D.D. Westbrook came off of IR / return, made his NFL debut last week, ran 21 routes on Blake Bortles, 33 dropbacks, had a fumble, dropped a pass, but still caught 3 balls for 36 yards on 6 targets. Like, this dude is a baller. Absolutely went ham at Oklahoma, went ham in the preseason. I am tempted to probably play more D.D. Westbrook than I should this week. So anything on D.D. And anybody else below 5K?
Yeah, the only concern for me is that Arizona has been better against number 2 and number 3 receivers lately. They're still struggling in the slot, which is where Keelan Cole will primarily be. But Tremont Williams has been playing well. So I don't think it's just like this cake matchup that it was when Justin Bethel was in there. But we still have I think we can very comfortably peg 6 targets as D.D. Westbrook's floor. He played limited snaps last week. They were easing him in. I believe he played 34 snaps compared to 45 for Keelan Cole. They are going to get the ball to him when he's on the field. So if they got him 6 targets when he played about half the snaps, they're going to get him 6 targets in this game against Arizona. So I think D.D. Westbrook is, you know, like you said, I mean, he could blow up. He could post 30 points. He's not going to get the 200 yards he predicted last week, but he could genuinely post like a monster game. And I really think his floor is 7, 8, 9 points. I don't think you're going to get a complete dud from him. So I like him quite a bit at 3,600. I think he and Corey Davis are my favorite plays under 5K at wide receiver.
Yeah. Corey Coleman, I projected for 8 targets at 4,300 in a tough matchup, at least worth considering. And with Kelvin Benjamin hurt and Jordan Matthews banged up, we've seen Zay Jones play a lot better lately. I think he's in play at 4K. You mentioned Kenny Stills. Let's move up a little bit here into the 6K range. You mentioned you had some concerns on T.Y. Hilton. I do think he will be popular. Alshon Jeffrey, Devin Funchess with Curtis Samuel out, I think will be somewhat popular. Jarvis Landry has been playing so well lately, I think will be popular. So talk to me about T.Y. Hilton and anything else in the 6K range.
Would you say that all these guys are overpriced? I mean, I don't know. Like Alshon seeing like often 6 to 7 targets and just scoring a ton. I think he has like 3 touchdowns on his last 12 catches. T.Y. Hilton has all these 2 to 4 point games. I don't know. It's just, it's tough, man, the way they priced guys this week. So my concern with T.Y. Hilton, Tennessee has allowed the third most wide receiver catches, right? Great. But they've allowed the fewest plays of 20 plus yards. Like no team in the NFL has allowed fewer plays of 20 plus yards. T.Y. Hilton ranks 10th in the NFL in that category, most plays of 20 plus yards. Of players in the top 10, only Robbie Anderson has relied on the big play for more of his production than Hilton has. So a huge chunk of Hilton's production comes from these monster plays. And, you know, Dick LeBeau, for whatever talent concerns you want to have with the Titans secondary, Dick LeBeau is a very sharp defensive coordinator. He's like 90 years old. He's been around the block. And that's why T.Y. Hilton had 1 catch or whatever it was, 2 catches last time these teams played. You know, he built everything to take Hilton out. Now, obviously, the Colts are going to counter this week and try to scheme T.Y. Hilton the ball, scheme him open. But obviously, Hilton is going to be their focus. There's a reason why Dante Moncrief had his most catches, most yards of the season in this matchup last time was because they couldn't throw to T.Y. Hilton. So if he were going to be low owned, I think he has this monster 30 plus point upside. If he were going to be low owned, I would be more inclined to play him. If he's high owned, I'm more inclined to fade him. Obviously, while I'm saying that, I need to say he can put up 30 plus points. If you want to play him at high ownership, go for it. But just his expectations of getting that are slightly lower in this spot than they would be in other spots. That's really my concern for Hilton this week.
Yeah, I will say as a counter, and I hear what you're saying, that the Titans have played a pretty soft quarterback pass game schedule, right? Like they've played Bortles, they've played the Dolphins, they've played the Colts, they've played the Browns, they've played the Ravens, they've played the Bengals. They obviously got lit on fire by the Steelers on national television last week. So I think I like Hilton more than you, but I totally understand the concerns.
And last time that you taught that I talked down T.Y. Hilton and then you gave a counterpoint was week 9 against Houston when he put up 37.5. And the time before that was week 5 against San Francisco when he put up 27.7. So yeah. To be clear, I mean, I could be completely wrong on this. I'm 0-2 on this conversation so far this year, but I do think it's worth having some concerns.
Yeah, I mean,
my bankroll is 0-2 on those weeks.
So. The Texans game, he was 4,900. Now he's 6,700. So obviously there's a huge difference there. Let's move to the 7K range. Doug Baldwin is pretty clearly a very strong play at 7K. Brandon Cooks was such a smash play last week. I don't see any reason why he should not be this week with Chris Hogan out. Once again, Michael Thomas continues to see some of the most consistent volume in the league. Mike Evans, I think his ceiling is lowered without Jameis Winston, but he's 7,400. And then the guy that we certainly need to talk about, he's at his lowest price for a non-Seahawks game since 2014. He's facing the team that allows the most fantasy points per game to wide receivers. However, his offensive coordinator is a dunce. It's Julio Jones. I expect Julio Jones to be extremely popular this week. How do you feel about him and the rest of the 7K range?
So, like Baldwin, love Michael Thomas's floor. Michael Thomas has 3 red zone touches this year. And Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara have combined for 50 red zone touches. 8 of Michael Thomas's 11 career touchdowns have come on passes inside the 10-yard line. So upside's a concern. Love his floor. Mike Evans is averaging like 1.8 yards after catch per catch. Like the dude just catches the ball and falls down. I don't want to pay 7,400 for him in a tough matchup. And then Brandon Cooks is my favorite in this price range. I love Brandon Cooks. I will have tons of, most of my money's on one team, but all of my other teams are going to be heavy on Brandon Cooks. And then Julio, we're bummed because he's done so poorly in DFS terms. He's got like his best game was 24 points or something. But his worst games are typically 13, 14 points. So with his price dropping where it is now, it's justifiable to pay for him. And just say, it's kind of like paying for Michael Thomas, right? Like Michael Thomas, we're paying up for him because he's going to get you 14, 15 points. And then you hope for a big game. Julio, I think we can comfortably peg him at 13, 14 points. He's averaging 9.8 targets per game across, I think it's his last 6, maybe last 5 games, which would be 4th in the NFL. So the targets are there. The matchup couldn't be better. And I think that this, even if he doesn't hit in this spot, which we don't know, we can tell you that this is the best spot for wide receivers in the NFL. We can't tell you when Steve Sarkisian will figure things out and actually get this offense scoring points, get Julio the yards that he should be getting. But I think that you're not going to be bummed because I think he'll still get you 14 or 15 points. And at this price, that's not going to kill you. So I'm definitely looking for a way to fit Cooks and Julio together. I think that Cooks has the same floor as Julio and right now a higher chance of hitting his ceiling. So I'm going Cooks over Julio in this price range. I think he's the better on paper play. Same floor, same ceiling, higher percentage chance of hitting his ceiling, but I really want both guys if I can get them. And so, yeah, I mean, there's some things to work out there of how to do that. But I do think that Julio, like, this is the best spot he's going to have. So, right, dive in and don't miss out on the 40-point game if it comes, I guess.
Yeah, I think the thing for tournaments is, like, he's probably going to be, like, 30% owned or 35% owned. And if you think that he has a reasonable shot to only score 14 or 15, yeah, that's fine. But if you fade him in tournaments, there are certainly a lot of other options you can look at, including perhaps AJ Green, who is 300 more than Julio, probably come at significantly less ownership. Or I shouldn't say significantly. I mean, I think AJ Green will be pretty owned considering it's Cleveland. People probably aren't aware of Jason McCourty. I think Julio is a significantly better play than AJ Green in this matchup. But once you start to factor in ownership, do you have any AJ Green takes?
So yeah, looking at ownerships, first time all week I've looked at it. Roto Grinders has Julio pegged at 25, AJ Green pegged at 15. I think I was assuming that with the just with how little Julio Jones has done and with how tough value is to come by, that he would be lower owned than that. So no, I mean, like you said, Julio is a better play on paper. AJ Green has a tough matchup. He scored a touchdown last time, but went like, what, 5 for 63? Yeah, so I think I would still prefer – we've got AJ Green at 15% and Julio at 25. I'd still take Julio in that scenario. But I'm taking – I mean, let me see. We've got Brandon Cooks at 10%. Like, Cooks is the better play. He's genuinely the better play. I mean, target expectation is the same. Floor is the same. Lack of scoring upside is the same because these guys are apparently need a big play to score. So I'll go Cooks first, but I'm still interested in Julio even at that ownership.
Two things. I think Cooks will be significantly higher owned than 10%, number one. And number two, AJ Green didn't have a great game against the Browns last time, but they absolutely trucked the Browns. And AJ Green did almost all of his damage in the first half. Like, he was on his way to a huge game. If the Browns could have done anything. But then again, that's a concern this week. I think the Bengals defense has a chance to really overwhelm DeShone Kizer this week. So that would be a concern as well. Anything else at wide receiver we did not touch?
Man, we talked about D.D. Westbrook. We talked about Kenny Stills. I mean, what more do the people want, right?
I know. It's enough for the people already. Okay, so let's get to tight end. Still working through my ownership projections, but I think the most popular tight end will be Jack Doyle, who is averaging over 9 targets per game in his last 5, I think, and is still only 4,500. Jack Doyle as chalk, are you interested or not?
Jack Doyle as chalk at 11 targets, yes. Jack Doyle is chalk at 7 targets, no. I think it's easy to overlook how good Tennessee has been against tight ends in terms of just completion rate. We see this a lot against Tennessee. Dude's getting a lot of targets and not catching a ton of them. And, you know, I think it's like a 60% completion rate, which is good to wide receivers, but tight end is like, that's like the highest percentage throw. And, you know, if you're getting 7 targets and they're catching fall down targets and catching, you know, 4 of them, that's not really doing it for me. So I like Doyle. He's in my top 5. I like Delanie Walker more. Delanie has not scored this year on 6 red zone targets. And last year he scored, maybe it's 8 red zone targets. And last year he scored on about half of his red zone targets. So there's definitely positive touchdown regression coming for Delanie Walker. He's getting the looks and just not scoring. He's seen 8 plus targets in, I believe, 4 out of 5 games. So for 500 more, I like Delanie more than I like Jack Doyle. A better player, a better offense, and you know, higher yardage upside. But I think that for me in this range, and really I probably won't break out of this range, it's Delanie, then Jared Cook and Jack Doyle kind of side by side, then Greg Olsen, with a lot of upside for Olsen in tournaments. And then if you want to go below that, I like Tyler Kroft, but I'd rather these guys.
Yeah, I'm concerned that coming off such a serious injury that we've seen like aggravations on, that they'll limit Greg Olsen. I haven't seen anything reported like that, but that would be my concern on Greg Olsen. But certainly in tournaments, that makes sense. I think Jared Cook is an awesome pivot off of Jack Doyle. Jared Cook has actually leads the Raiders in yards, continues to just be a huge part of their offense. And when you play the Broncos, even though they're certainly weakened this year, a lot of the targets get funneled inside to the tight end. So I like Jared Cook. Delanie, you know, he's always so banged up, and that's why he doesn't end up on my list. But if you think Delanie is healthy, I agree. He is pretty strong as well. And Tyler Kroft, as Jay mentioned the flowchart play. The Browns continue to just get absolutely buried by the tight end position. If you are willing to pay up, and I think it will be somewhat contrarian to pay up this week because of how little value there is and because the high-priced tight ends kind of failed lately. I mean, Zach Ertz failed in his last game. Rob Gronkowski failed in his last game. Travis Kelce did play well, but Travis Kelce is 7,300. I doubt very many people are going to play Gronk at 6,900, even though the Dolphins have been absolutely atrocious against the tight end position. And I don't think very, very many people are going to play Zach Ertz either for a myriad of reasons. He hasn't played a good game in a while due to his hamstring injury. And Jimmy Graham, I think, is in a really good spot too, or at least in a reasonable spot at 5,800. So I think there's some good plays to be contrarian if you pay up at tight end. Would you agree there? Does anybody stand out to you?
Yeah, I agree. I'm not on Ertz. Carson Wentz has not thrown the ball more than 31 times or more than 32 times since week two. He's averaging 16 completions per game across, I think it's his last five or six games. 16 completions just doesn't leave a ton of volume for PPR sites. And so Ertz could score a touchdown, but he's not going to pile up points through catches. And that concerns me at his price. I love Gronk, love Kelce. I think Gronk and Kelce are both have, you know, a 20-point expectation this week. So I would love to play either of them. And then again, yeah, Jimmy Graham is just seeing all the end zone work in the NFL. Like if you put every end zone target in the NFL into a bucket, like half of those targets have gone to Jimmy Graham this year. So I think he's a good play week in and week out. Obviously high variance because you're depending on the touchdown, but I think he's a strong play. Not a guy I would pay up for in cash games, but just because if you don't get the touchdown, you're in rough shape for what you paid for. But in tournaments, the upside's definitely there.
Yeah, he's only 800 more than Delanie Walker.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, so Delanie Walker, though, is he's getting 12 to 15 points at least four straight games without scoring a touchdown, and the usage in the red zone is there. Not Jimmy Graham's usage, but, I mean, Delanie Walker is fine. He's healthy right now. He's been producing, and the only reason nobody's paying attention is because he hasn't scored the touchdowns.
Yeah, no, that's true. I guess he's fallen through my crack, honestly, just because he's always on the injury report. And I think like he lives like in Hefe's building or something. Like he's got to be richer than that to live in Hefe's building. You know what I mean? All right.
Good point. Fade Delanie Walker.
Let's move on.
We've picked on Hefe so much this year in his absence.
Let's move on to defense. People saw what Jacksonville did last week. People saw what the Ravens did last week. People saw what the Chargers did last week and on Thanksgiving. They are going to be hungry, I think, to pay up for defense. Jacksonville is facing Blaine Gabbert. The Eagles are facing Mitch Trubisky. The Bengals are facing DeShone Kizer. The Raiders, if you can stomach that, are facing Paxton Lynch. I think my initial lean was the Eagles against Trubisky, but they have such like low pass volume. Like if they can keep the game close, which I know it's unlikely, but if they do, they'll just try to run the ball on every play. And that's obviously not good for defensive scoring. So I think the Bengals and the Eagles are right there. And obviously the Jaguars just like somehow get there every single week. Like the Jaguars just like, oh, the Jaguars only have 10 DK points right now. All right. And here's their defensive touchdown. So anything at defense that stood out to you?
Yeah, I'm really not concerned about the pass game volume with the Bears. I mean, the Eagles have faced, I believe, 15.8 running back rush attempts per game, which is just an absurdly low number. They're one of only three teams facing fewer than 20. Teams just cannot run on the Eagles, and the Eagles always have a lead. So I think we see a lot of passing. Eagles are, I believe, third in sacks and second in interceptions. Maybe I have those flipped around. But yeah, I mean, I like the Eagles defense quite a bit. I'll throw the Patriots in that bucket against Matt Moore. And I just think that, you know, mistakes will be made by the Dolphins. I like all those ones you mentioned, and I'm not all those that you mentioned besides the Raiders who just don't force turnovers. I think they'll get their first pick this week, but you know, they don't get sacks. They don't force turnovers. So just expectations overall are pretty low. Even if they get a defensive touchdown, you're probably looking at like 12 points or 14 points. So I'm fine skipping them. Are there any cheap defenses that you like? I mean, I think that the Jets are viable in tournaments against the Panthers. just because they do force turnovers and Cam is mistake prone. I think that you could even make a case for Cleveland. Again, they get sacks, they stop the run, they've allowed the eighth fewest yards. Andy Dalton makes some mistakes. Not a strong play, but if you want to pay down, that's all I've seen really that I can stomach.
Yeah, Jets were on my list. Arizona in a home game against Blake Bortles was on my list, and the Falcons in a home game against Ryan Fitzpatrick. But, you know, nothing great. And once you get up to that high kind of 2K range, then you're not that far away from perhaps the Patriots or the Eagles or something like that. So, yeah, I'm going to try to find a way to get up to kind of the mid 3K range, I hope, at defense. All right, the people need their stacks. They want to know who to stack up. We will give one contrarian stack, one chalky stack. Why don't you go first with one of those?
Yeah, I'm going to throw a contrarian stack at you. Paxton Lynch to Demaryius Thomas or Emmanuel Sanders, and I wouldn't mind throwing Devontae Booker onto that team. I think that people are going to completely, completely, completely overlook Demaryius and Emmanuel Sanders. Paxton Lynch is not a significant downgrade from what they've had with Simeon and Osweiler. And again, Musgrave is going to just scheme really easy completions to these guys. So I think, you know, things could go totally off the rails. We're talking about Paxton Lynch, a first-round pick who just they've refused to let see the field even when he's been healthy. But in tournaments, I mean – would it surprise any of us if Demaryius catches 8 or 9 balls or if Emmanuel Sanders catches 8 or 9 balls? And against this Raiders defense, that could go for 100, 120 yards and touchdown. So I really like that in tournaments. I think it'll be really low owned.
I will give a chalk stack first, and it is Matt Ryan to Julio Jones. Just a really high floor, I think, in a home game against the Bucks. Like Falcons, this is the best spot they've faced all season. This is the worst pass defense they've faced all season. This is the cheapest Julio has been since 2014. And I didn't check Matt Ryan's kind of price log, but at 6,400, I mean, he's 1,300 less than Tom Brady this week. So it would be pretty hard for me to see Ryan to Julio failing. I know some people are going to be like, oh, well, Julio got 6 for 80. He failed. Well, at 7,700, that's not really a fail for Julio.
I will go with about it as chalky as you can be. We've got Russ Wilson as our highest owned quarterback, Doug Baldwin behind only Julio, Corey Davis, and T.Y. Hilton at wide receiver. But I think that's a great pairing going Russ to Baldwin.
All right, I'm going to go way off the board for my contrarian, and this would be a very large field play, but it would be Tyrod to Zay Jones, assuming that both Kelvin Benjamin and Jordan Matthews are out, or even if Jordan Matthews is active but will likely be limited. I think that Tyrod always has big games in his pocket due to his legs, and with the way the Bills defense has been playing, we could see a situation where Tyrod gets a lot of volume getting up there in the second half. And Zay Jones is just like, they do not have a lot else to throw to. Everybody is on the injury report. Kelvin, Jordan Matthews, Charles Clay, and Zay Jones has played better. So that would be one way off the board for me. That is
I love that call.
Oh, that means a lot to me.
it means nothing to you, but I do love it.
That is going to do it for this Thanksgiving edition. I know everybody ate their bird carcass on Thursday and then they woke up and like had a bird carcass sandwich for breakfast. And then like they washed it down with some disgusting canned cranberry juice and they celebrated the genocide of the Native Americans. I hope they continue to do that for the rest of the weekend. For Jerry, for JM, I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.